Welcome to the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today is Monday, and as you know, on Mondays I like to interview activists and concerned citizens and to find out what's going on in St. Louis. Many of you know, or frankly attempt to ignore, the fact that we have a fuse wrap dump site on fire in St. Louis that is now burning. I believe it's burning nuclear radiation. It's right next to it, 300 feet away. They don't know where it's at. So today I have with us Drew Kuhn from the Missouri Accountability Project. So I'm going to jump right in and let Drew join us. Thank you for joining us, Drew.
Thank you for having me, Lonnie. Thanks to your listeners for tuning in today.
Yes.
Beautiful Monday, I assume. This is a pre-recorded interview, but Lonnie and I will be talking about the environmental, public health, and safety issues in St. Louis and how they relate nationally. And I'm, as stated, an organizer with the Missouri Accountability Project. .org is our website. You can visit us there to find latest news reports, aggregated reporting on issues, particularly concerning Missouri. But again, also, I think there's something we can learn from everyone. So thanks again for having me on.
Well, thank you. And let me give the date, because today is July 17th. We plan on playing this interview tomorrow on July 18th. So it probably will be a gray day here in Eugene. I mean, it's usually a little bit overcast, and then it becomes geoengineered, and then we start getting the geoengineering. That's kind of what's happening. It should be blue, but not always. Look, I really appreciate, this is the thing about the geoengineering, even the projects. What St. Louis is suffering from is the very same thing. It's the secrecy from World War II, isn't it, Drew? This is the uranium that was buried secretly, sold secretly. There's a quagmire of lack of accountability.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're suffering from more broadly that other places in the nation can relate from. If I may share a short excerpt about our particular situation here.
Please
in Missouri.
Do. Please do.
This was written in 2014 by Dan Norris, a previous employee of Missouri Department of Natural Resources.
What's the person's name?
Dan Norris, N-O-R-R-I-S. The current Office of Public Information at DNR and the Governor's Office is nothing short of information control. News is constantly spun in a manner to try and make everything look good. While there's a fair amount of good news to report on, many of the aspects that a regulatory agency deals with are simply not that cheery or uplifting. It is an insult to the intellect of the public to try and paint a positive picture out of something that just isn't positive. In many cases, public information doesn't happen anymore unless if it's bad news. We should not allow ourselves to live in a society where public officials are impeded the free flow of information to the public who they are elected to represent. Yet, that is where we find ourselves today. The direction of the current governor's administration and the degree of bureaucracy in the state government has left many dedicated employees on both sides of the political spectrum looking for the exit or counting down the days until they are eligible to retire. Part of my decision to leave my position with Missouri DNR is because overall disappointment with how we were able to perform our job and anger at the degree to which bureaucracy consumes day-to-day progress. During my time in Missouri, there have been political pushes resulting in disproportionate power for industry while reducing the rights and power of individual citizens. Politics and fear, unfortunately, are more powerful than science and reason. I wish all Missourians the best in regaining their voice and obtaining a governance structure that represents the diverse interests of the state as a whole, rather than just those with political power. So what I think we suffer from is a result of our system. And locally, what we wanted to do, many of us wanted to do, and I got to doing that, I think this letter hits on is reminding citizens of their individual rights and the power that they have in their voice, and to try to inform that voice by aggregating reporting so they can hold our regulatory agencies accountable. And so that's, in a sense, what we're trying to accomplish with Missouri Accountability Project. And, you know, I know we've discussed this before. St. Louis has a long history of radioactive waste, a legacy of it, and at the same time, it's not just the nuclear industry. It's chemical pollutants. It's the PCBs and dioxin at Times Beach.
Legacy. I reject that phrase. That's like them trying to sugarcoat it.
Yeah, I think it kind of insinuates a pride.
You know,
doesn't it kind of insinuate a pride that you're like, oh, it's something that we've built, but it is something that we've built, but it's nothing to be proud of.
It's not a legacy. It's an insult. It's an ignored crime. It's really our government abusing an entire city, allowing people to build. I mean, Rob Frund, the man that was on friend who was on our show, he is mortified. He helped build houses out there. He had no idea. That's outrageous to put that kind of emotional trauma on developers and people that own those houses. They don't even want to sell their houses.
Well, you know what? Then there's the people that were bought out, and so you have this land that. You know, it's just like Carrollton. Many people aren't familiar with that, except for probably maybe the 500 people that live in this radius. But was a large tract of land, a very large tract of land next to the landfill in the airport that was bought out with eminent domain by the airport for new landing strips. And I don't know if any of your listeners have flown into Lambert, but we have a massive airport that we use a fraction of. Yeah, there's many ways, I think, to skirt around accountability for environmental degradation, and I think it's on us in some part to ask the hard questions, to ask why, and to demand answers.
Well, this is the thing. What they have done is legislated the need to provide answers away. When the NRC says we're not required to tell you, that's exactly right. They're not required to tell us. They do not even test. Like, they test for cesium-137, 134. Those are easy tracers because they have a short life. What they can test for is all the plutonium that they put into the Pacific Ocean or into the air or into the dirt during the insane drive for the militarization of the world right after World War II. I mean, they carpet bombed America. If you look at the map of the... Now, that plutonium is everywhere. This is why we have increasing cancers. So, this is why I really believe this is... I think they're attempting to normalize the radiation rates and the cancer rates. It's like, well, that's the age of, we're living it. Too bad. We're here. Tough.
To manufacture our consent for an age of fission.
Yes. I mean, exactly. Exactly. Because think about it. They're having they're having the Olympics in Tokyo, which we know is radiated. And all of this.
When? I thought the next Olympics were in
2020 Brazil. In 2020.
Oh, okay.
You think the radiation is going to go away by 2020 and the food? It's going to get worse.
Oh, no. I didn't know it was in Japan.
It's going to be in 2020. It's an outrage. They're doing well, one speaking in Rio.
That's one I was familiar with. Speaking of sports, for this, your listeners that are sports fans, you may remember our St. Louis Rams went to Los Angeles to build to fill a stadium that was built on environmentally damaged landscape, but also where they had planned, which this didn't really get into much national news, where they had planned to build the new stadium was still radiated from the Mallinckrodt processing plant for the Manhattan Project in downtown St. Louis. The zoning would have put a parking lot over radioactive waste for what that's worth. Loose connection, but.
Wow. So let me ask you that. Would they have, is that why they didn't do it? Is that why they moved to LA? Because of the radiation? They're like, what the heck?
You know, honestly, I would think so, but probably not. I mean, it probably came down to money, and there was so much dark money floating around that was unaccountable to anyone. I don't really know what the whole stadium debacle was about, just because there's no transparency on it.
Well, you know what is interesting is when I looked at the map, one of the things I first noticed, you know, because I'm from Oregon, I wanted to familiarize myself. I looked at the map and I saw that the St. Louis Ram, their training center, was like in between Coldwater Creek and Westlake Landfill. Their training center.
Yeah, it's in that same.
But
what
I would be curious to do, that would be an interesting group of people to follow, wouldn't it? I would love to see which of those men came there and trained and tracked their family's level of diabetes, schizophrenia. There's like five or six endocrine problems. Those things happen before cancer when you're exposed to radiation. So your quality of life diminishes, and then you get a lot of times you break out with radiation or you're sterile.
And is it any wonder we hadn't won a Super Bowl in over a decade?
Yes. But you know what is interesting? Is
sorry,
like,
that's crude. But I have to, you know, I have to laugh about it. I have to find some humor where I can.
I would be curious to track their family history, like their children and their families that came there to live. They are a unique group of people that could be studied as a scientific base, because they came, they lived there for some of them 10 years, you know what I mean, a long period of time, and then they moved away. You know what I mean? So now they're gone. And so I'd be curious to see, track their levels of diabetes. That would be a good scientific study, don't you think, Drew?
I think any long-term epidemiological studies are in the long run will benefit us in our understanding of nuclear contamination. I know particularly with Coldwater Creek, they have a CDC liaison. Her name's Erin, who's a epidemiologist, and they're in the process of that and collecting data, and they've worked with the community to put together this study, and you know, but those take time. Those take any epidemiological study is going to take quite a bit of time to thoroughly examine.
Well, Drew, I have a spare copy. I bought two
Cheers.
Spare copies of John Goffman's book. You're a scientific type, right?
Yes. I'm studying computer science, software engineering.
Right, but do you understand, I'm going to send you this book because it's a very thick book. It's a comprehensive book. He wrote it for the general public, but with about his scientific studies. It's extensive, very extensive information about their findings on what happens with radiation. You know what else you should look up is Dr. Gilmedi out in New Mexico. He's been studying for over 30 years. This is where Dana was talking to me on Friday. He gets very upset because this man's been studying beagles for 30 years.
And beagles?
Beagles. Testing beagles for 30 years. To see how low of a dosage can they give them of americium to see before it's not harmful. What he's discovered is that there is no level of americium that is not harmful. It is a highly toxic radiological contaminant. It is outrageous. And so Dana is very, you know, and his point is well taken. How long do they have to keep studying and torturing these animals? Why don't we just declare it toxic and say we need to prevent this stuff, and how are we going to remediate it when it gets into the atmosphere?
I think when it comes to policy, we don't really operate on a precautionary principle. We just will assume what we can get away with, you know, and I think that's a dangerous place to live in.
Yeah, it is a dangerous place to live in. Well, you know what it is? It's a disregard for life. That's one thing Dana and I were talking, and I agree with him. They're very nihilistic. They don't believe in the future. They're like, well, it's just so bad that we might as well just make $1 billion now, and you know, hopefully our families will have the best medicine, and we can. And they're going towards nanotech and all this like biotechnology.
You know, that's not so hard for me to understand, but that's unacceptable to me to, you know, sell out even for, you know, for my generation. I'm 23 to sell my children's grandchildren's future. Like, I guess that's where that worldview might differ. And
what do your parents think? What do your parents think about your activism? Are they actively engaged in this process?
No. my mom is a wonderful woman. She's a nurse. That's been something I've been struggling with to a certain degree, is just my relationship. My dad's in poor health, and I mean, they've always supported me, I guess, as a way to answer your question.
Well,
they've always
they believe that this is a threat to them, or do you think they think that you're just being, like, my daughter thinks I'm just being too, I shouldn't be as freaked out about it all the time, because I pay attention to it, and I watch which nuclear power plants are falling apart. I think about the air currents. I think about the fish. Like, I can't go out to dinner and eat fish. You know what I mean? Like, I was out with my niece and her boyfriend. I was meeting him for the first time, and he ordered fish, and I put the menu over my eyes. I was like, my mouth fell. And I said nothing, and my niece looked at me. She goes, "Auntie, not one word." You know what I mean? Like, this is how it goes with people who are paying attention. I want to change that paradigm so people can understand the reality.
I understand. We've never. It's not common for our dinner table to discussion. Our dinner table discussion to, you know, get too uncomfortable. You know, there's uncomfortable. There's no, you know, there's no really bar held so far as openly communicating. It's just, you know, I get a sense from my family that I feel pervades our society and in a way that it's kind of, you know, old. What can we do? I don't know. You know, or what? It's not so much what can we do. It's, you know, what do we want to do? And if it's, I don't know. We have different priorities. You could say this is a priority to me. I mean, these issues and my education, these issues, and you know, my livelihood. That's a priority for me. But you know, I'm also thinking, if I ever want to have a family, like, is this the place I feel like they would be best suited? And I can't say that.
Mm-mm. No way, man. If you have a family, you need to be living at least away from there, on the other side of the state, or upwind or downwind. You don't have to, like, travel to the other side of the world, but Definitely, right. You need to not be living there.
Yeah.
I mean, for
the
real.
Epicenter.
But let me ask you this then, because sure. I went through this phase with my own children where I was a little bit resentful that I can't talk to them about this. Like, I told my daughter, in fact, we talked about it the other day, and I said, look, I've gone through that phase of being upset that you guys don't care. She's like, Mom, it's not that we don't care. We're busy, and what can we do? Like, really, what can we do? I said, you know what you can do? Push back. Go on to the EPA and make a comment. You know, listen to some of the information. Listen to the information that we're getting out there. It's not just wild opinion. We give links. We encourage people to actively engage with the government because those are the people, as much as we don't like how it's set up, that's what we've got.
Well, that's part of the manufacturing consent, is that we're led to believe that we don't have any options to engage civically. We're led to believe that we don't have any power, that our voice doesn't mean anything, that, you know, what can you do? There's no shortage of options there, but I think it's when you really start to analyze the beef of what's going on, then the question shifts to, what can I effectively do? How can I make the most use out of my time to make a big difference? And I think that's for me personally, is to dig and to publish and to ask questions. And
on your website, the Missouri Accountability Project, do you have published
.org?
.org. I apologize.
That's okay.
Missouri, and do they spell out the whole thing, or is it map.org?
No, MAP.org was taken. It's spelled out.
So it's the Missouri Accountability Project.org. Okay, great.
Correct.
So that's the correct one if they want to find you.
Yes, and your listeners will be on, will hear us tomorrow, but we've revamped, redesigned, streamlined our website to make it more user-friendly.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's kind of what we've been up to, aside from keeping on top of latest reports and publishing those findings.
You're a computer person, right? That's what you're studying,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
So, like, you know what would be really sweet? I'm just going to say this on the air so that maybe the people who I'm going to speak about can engage with you. I think it would be really awesome if your site, Donna Gilmore's site, the Radcast, all these really awesome anti-nuclear sites could all interlink, so it be on each other's pages, so that when you click on one page, you automatically on the front page, there's a link to see all these other pages that give you the same information, like information pursuant to their area. You know what I mean? Like, people will come to your site, but they might not know that, like, the radcast.org is publishing all this information and doing initiatives to shut down the Columbia Generating Station.
Well, here's what we can do, Lonnie. I'm glad you brought this up, because as some of your listeners may know, we've done interviews in the past, and so we're keeping this archive of information. And on the front page where we've moved our archive, there's a tab for Age of Fission for your radio. It's a YouTube playlist. But if you'd like to gather some sources, present those to me. Wouldn't take any time to include that in our with our resources.
Well, I can give you some signed copies of scientific journals that I think are still public domain. Especially if you're a student, you can access a lot of these things.
Yes.
And that's what I've done.
Yeah, that's a huge benefit to being a student. I have
huge.
Access to
me too.
To these
me
databases.
Too. That's how I found that talk by Dr. Weinberg from 1972, where he called themselves. That's where that whole nuclear priesthood phrase came from. Was him? He coined it. He said, you know, humanity has entered into a Faustian agreement with us, and you now have to trust the nuclear priesthood to protect you from now until infinity, because this stuff is going to require protection. You can't. And that is really, do you know about this also, Drew? Are they doing the same thing in St. Louis, where they want to just bury it, shake their hands and say, okay, we're done now. And then
cap it and leave it.
Yeah, that's what they want to do in many places around the country. So it's up to us as citizens of this country to not allow that to happen, because these are government agencies. That's what I think.
Absolutely. I mean, the Department of Energy, they're one of the principal responsible parties here on with Westlake. And this is, it does come back to, it comes back to a federal issue. I think it's unfortunate that it went under the jurisdiction of EPA. I don't feel like their infrastructure, their bureaucracy, their funding, or, you know, to disregard their, the intent of their founding, but I don't, they seem unequipped to handle the extent of the waste problem that we have in this country. And it's, I think, worth noting that House Bill 4100, which many of you may have been following, which transfers jurisdiction of Westlake from EPA to Army Corps of Engineers. My take on this, it's in the House now, House is out on recess. And for those of you familiar with how the House works or doesn't work, committees are typically where bills are sent to die. And, you know, if they don't make it out of committee in a timely fashion, then I really question the political will behind them. And I just found it curious that the Missouri Senate introduced their version of the bill just before the holidays fundraising season for the upcoming election. It's legislation that went passed unanimously through the Senate, but ultimately died in the House. So I think it's important for us, wherever you live in the country and whatever your issues are locally, to take a hard look at all of your candidates this election season. This is a pinnacle election. To take a hard look at what they've done and where they stand and who's funding their campaigns. And so, well, I don't have much hope, maybe a vestige of one. This election could be a huge turning point, for better or worse.
Well, if people would still stay engaged, even though there is just massive efforts to make us not want to be engaged, it's like even on this issue, this bill basically was put under committee, and Congressman Frank Pallone Jr. sat on it and refused to approve it because he wants money for his own district. That's essentially what they're saying. There's so little money. They're fighting over whose district is the most toxic, essentially. That's what they're saying. I mean, it's so outrageous. Like, why can't we just give them more money? Why do we have to say, why can't we cut out money for Saudi Arabia or for Qatar or for the CIA or for, you know what I mean? Like, there are places to dig in the funding that we could pay for these things. This is urgent for the health of our country. This is not optional.
But it threatens the illusion of power and control of our state, of our system. To admit there's a problem, you know, is to, yeah, someone's responsible for it. And if someone's responsible, they're, you know, financially responsible.
To be honest, I can't help but think about that kid that was killed. We're pre-recording this on Sunday. Today is July 17th. We're going to play this on the air tomorrow, July 18th. And I am still in shock that a 27-year-old DNC staffer was shot for no apparent reason four times with a bullet. So that was no mistake. And the police are saying, gee, it's a random act of violence. He lives in D.C. Violence happens. No, that's not how it happens. He was about to give a report on the election fraud. So what happened to him? I mean,
off you go.
You know, they want us to vote for this person? No. And then we have the other option, you know, like Trump could get in and he could say, oh, I don't feel like doing it. I'm going to give it to Mike Pence. Then we'd have President Pence, which is like really the worst option in the world. He's far worse than Trump. I mean, Mike Pence wants gay people to go to conversion therapy.
Pray the gay away. Hallelujah.
So this is where we're at, Drew.
Yeah.
Welcome. Yikes.
Glad to meet you here, Lonnie.
Yeah, and we're talking about the radiation in your city, and not just the radiation, but the chemical and the pollution. It's not just the radiation. You guys are being this health physicist that I was speaking to through Coldwater Creek mentioned this. He was saying The chemical pollution there is a far greater immediate threat right away to the people of St. Louis. He goes, I've been arguing with the people, the anti-nukers here. He goes, but it's a very serious, a lot of what you don't see, you can't smell. It's horrible. It's just like the nuclear. It's just as bad. So
yeah, there was a recent, there was an epidemiological study. It was a multi-site covert epidemiological study looked at, I think 14 municipal landfills in Italy, and looked at their sulfur compound concentrations. And over like 15 years, they studied the morbidity and mortality. People five clicks away found an increased rate of lung cancer and morbidity and mortality just from the the instance of living next to a landfill. And for those not familiar with Urchin Landfill particularly. It's not a healthy landfill. The hydrogen sulfide, sulfur dioxide, all these different sulfur compounds and methane and O2, they're not like any other site. It may not be literally licking flames, but what's there is hot enough to give off a lot of pollution. And Republic Services isn't typically willing to account for those emissions, or when you think about living next to, and they they're telling us this could this fire could burn for another 10 years, and there's no way to put it out. There's just no way. We don't know any way to put this out. So the way I'm looking at it is they're burning their trash, so they don't have to deal with it, and we have to deal with that if it were up to them for a decade. When you think about how much life you live in 10 years, I can think about when I was 13.
It's been going for 5, so it's going to be a total of a minimum 15.
Right, that's what I mean. From standing here today, I feel very grateful looking forward that, the time frame I was referencing. But, we've been living with this for, at least with the emissions and the stench and the odor. And honestly, it's an embarrassment. I think a lot of people feel embarrassed in their local and their state agencies that let them that put up with this.
That is an embarrassment. Think about that. It's funny because here in Eugene we have what we call stinky smelly hippies. Like literally, people you can smell from across the table. Like, seriously, I've never moved to a place where you could actually smell someone when they walk in the room. I did when I moved here. But that's because they live they live like people did 100 years ago, where they don't bathe but once a week, and they wash their clothes once a month. And
hey, at least they're living.
And they're happy, and they're great people, and whatever. So, God bless you, what I mean? But it's weird to think about that the whole city has to put up with this. Every man, woman, and child living there. Every police officer, every firefighter, every judge, every
teacher, every doctor, every nurse, everyone.
Everybody there is just putting up with it. How many people are putting up with that stench, would you say?
At least, then within 5 clicks, probably 30,000 to 40,000 people. That's a guesstimate.
Wow. And there is no major urge to organize and take to the streets every Saturday, every Sunday, have 30,000 people come out, just place themselves somewhere in just one place and say, we're not leaving until you pay attention to this.
Yeah. I think that's what this is culminating to. And I think there's a reluctance here with our recent experience and to organize in mass numbers on the streets. I mean, it's not safe. People die when that happens, and I don't think everyone's really willing to take that risk or even acknowledge it.
What do you mean? To the streets in St. Louis, you're afraid of the security guards?
The National Guard. I mean,
the police officers, the militarized police that would show up and pick a fight.
Yeah, it's more than just protest fatigue. It's more than just saying, I got a lot of shit going on. I think it's a legitimate fear of a militarized police force. I've seen what that looks like. I've looked down the barrel of it. I've taken pictures and witnessed it. And you were
telling a story.
So I know that's real, but
they actually held a gun to your head. It had rubber bullets.
Oh yeah. We were talking about, military procedure and convention and rules of engagement. You don't raise your weapon, unless you intend to fire it. And, they had, armed, soldiers with 50 caliber sniper rifles, presumably armed with rubber bullets. I would hope
Are you black?
But they had trained.
Are you black?
Aren't we all a little black? No,
well,
I mean,
I just thought
my family,
I'd ask if you were African American because.
No,
you know,
I usually answer multicultural. I have roots in Native Americans and African Americans and Europeans.
Does your skin look dark, though? Are you dark skinned?
I have a tan complexion. I don't.
The reason I ask is all the feeds we got here about that situation showed us that the police officers were aiming the guns at black people.
Yeah, I mean, that's the media narrative, but I think what's more dangerous than the color of your skin is a camera.
As
a journalist, as a witness, I always have a camera. That scares someone more than, that scares police more than the color of your skin. There was an article that ran in the Post-Dispatch about the Florissant Police Department, which they're just entrenched with this old guard, white supremacists and people who know the history of North County, St. Louis, and white flight and Florissant. They would kind of get the context, but the article headline was "Shut up, we're red," and that cameras are on, and. That's a prevailing culture. It's the thin blue line. The difference now being that we've spent trillions of dollars, given trillions of dollars to the military industrial complex, and we're just oversaturated. So we've armed our police forces to the teeth, and it's like walking down the streets of Baghdad, but 15 minutes from my house. And I just can't really describe how that changes your worldview and your perspective of things. I remember walking down, I was taking a friend home from work that lived in that area. And this was, I think right before or during, the announcement that there would be no indictment. And, we walk in numbers cause it's safe. I just remember walking up to a county police officer, and he grabs his assault rifle that he had slung around his back and readies it. Doesn't lift it, but he readies it and says, "Hands where I can see them, papers now."
Wow.
That's the kind of language you hear at a check stop in Palestine. That's the kind of language you hear under martial law. And
Gestapo says that. That's,
yeah, your papers now. And for I
what do you say, hands above your head?
No, hands where I can see them.
Hands where I can see them. Assuming
give me your
that
papers
you
now.
Might be a potential threat to him.
Yeah. And so there's I have an option of how to respond in that moment.
How old were you
and
when that happened?
I can this was last year. This 2015.
Wow.
So there's some options for how I can respond in that situation. I can respond with obedience and submittal and give him the role of authority, or I can view him as a human being. And I talked to him and I said, "I don't have my papers." I used his language, but "I don't have my papers and I don't need my papers. We're walking home. They just got off of work and, we're unarmed." And, we asked him, I said, "Are we free to go? Can we move past here? Are we under arrest?" And I could tell he was from the area, and I could tell the way that we responded to him with respect made a connection, so he wasn't belligerent. Beyond that, he just explained that that side of the street was closed and that there were no access to those neighborhoods, that they had locked down the block, and that we'd have to find another way home or somewhere else to be. Like, he just you just can't be here. But it was his reaction to us, you know, as a group of people, to see us as a threat, to see us as criminals until we prove to him otherwise. And wow.
Why were the streets closed?
There a kid got shot that night. It was the night of the indictment.
That was the night what was his name? Michael Brown?
No. This was a year after when the grand jury decided not to indict.
Another person got shot?
Unless you were paying attention, you wouldn't know, but the killing never stopped.
The killing never stopped? Is it still ongoing? Is there still like a little subterranean war going on in St. Louis?
I mean, not just in St. Louis, everywhere. I feel like it's, I think.
It's the militarization of the police.
It's the militarization of the police. Getting back to it, that's my point.
This lady that I know in Kentucky, she's like, Black Lives Matter is going to protest and they're threatening people. I'm like, look, I support Black Lives Matter because it's not about them. It's about the militarized police. And unfortunately, Black people and people of color feel the brunt of the racism, the encouraged racism in this country. Look at that Indian man who got through. He was visiting his daughter, an elderly Indian man walking down the street somewhere in USA, caught on camera. And he didn't understand. He didn't speak English, and he was like, "Huh, huh." Because he didn't immediately comply, two grown men threw him to the ground on concrete, and he is now paralyzed from the neck down for doing nothing in the United States.
We'll break your back.
And you know what? We act like that's no big deal because the cops did it. We have to just accept that. That 9-year-old child got killed last year because the cop was a lunatic and shot a child. And he just got transferred to another police department, and we have to accept that. You get stopped in your own neighborhood and told to, you know, put your hands in front of you and hand me your papers because a kid got shot. They want to know who you are? Like, for real? This is America, Drew? Is that what we are creating in America? Is that what our elected officials are allowing?
Yes, that's what I see. Anyway,
we need conscientious objectors. And this is what I say. In fact, let's mention this. Please go to the EPA's website before the 25th. In our last interview, we said it was the 27th. It's actually the 25th. So go there. We'll put a link in this interview about, you know, how to get to the docket number. Click on it. Make your comments.
I'll share you the link on MissouriAccountabilityProject.org so you can have it for
Both. Do it on yours so that you can have your own, and then do your own. I'll provide a link on this when I put the radio show together, when I give it to Joel. Well, I'll give both of them because do it twice. Do it on theirs to give Missouri Accountability Project some feet. You know what I mean? Some peoples. Like some voice. If they have a lot of people going through their link, it gives them more power and more political, quote, political power. Am I correct there, Drew?
It gives people their power. But I wanted to mention also, I think we brought this up when we first discussed, if you have any questions regarding these new protective action guidelines, please feel free. You know, we'll provide you with as much information as we can, but please feel free if you have any questions. Reach out to either of us. You can reach us through our website for any inquiries. And, you know, we're preparing a collaborative public comment. So if there's anything you'd like included, any questions?
Do you have like a summary page of this, of the changes at the EPA? Actually, if you open up the docket and you read it, it's an outrage. They do say what they're going to do. I can't believe they're actually like – putting it out there so bluntly.
Yeah, transparent, yeah.
It's like, say what? Like, I opened up the docket expecting gobbledygook, but the big, most important part is pretty clearly stated. They're going to poison us. What they're going to do is tell us that, hey, folks, there's been a nuclear meltdown, so now we've changed the radiation rates, and you're fine because you're in the allowable limit, and when it gets over a certain point, we'll let you know. While the nuclear radiation's going on. Only it's thousands of times higher than it should be. You're going to be poisoned.
Everything is under control. Everything is okay. Obey, consume.
Yes, obey, consume. Don't even think about talking up. And that's what we have to break. That's what we have to break. And we're asking people to go to the Missouri Accountability Project. Don't give up on attempting to engage people. And I think it's extremely important to be respectful and to listen to people and their points of view. Because people are convinced that they're right. All of us, like, pro-nukers talk to me like, oh, you've just been brainwashed. No, I'm looking at the oncology rates. I'm looking at, like, the mass animal die-offs that are going on around the planet. Because since the last 70 years, we've had nothing but nuclear pollution, technology pollution. We have, Drew, am I incorrect?
We're living, we're living the sixth mass extinction presently.
United Nations named these big islands of trash, Trashlandia, so they can discuss them.
Oh, I have an idea about that. Oh, you might get a kick out of this, and I think your listeners might also. So the Pacific Trash Island, right?
Yeah.
Is what you're talking about?
Trashlandia.
It's massive, and most of it's plastics, which is crazy. But what if we could take that plastic, feed it through a 3D printing ship, you know, a 3D printing manufacturing ship, and recycle it, turn it into a platform that serves three purposes: harvesting solar energy, geothermal energy, which is now possible, and water desalination.
You know why?
Just a thought. Just a thought.
Those are great ideas, but how would that interact with radiation? Does radiation interact with any of those processes?
I knew you'd ask that. I'm glad you brought it up because I do. Radiation, you cannot remove radiation from water. Once radiation has contaminated water, it's there. There's no treatment process. There's no possible way. Albert Einstein's written on this.
Yeah.
There's no possible way. So, you know, we're really breaching into an era now where, you know, the Earth is made up of 70% of water, but a third of 1% of that water is fresh water, groundwater, surface water, water that we can drink and use, and we're soiling it. We're soiling it not just for us, we're soiling it for our children, we're soiling it for our grandchildren, our grandchildren's grandchildren, and
the
entire Earth. I mean, that more broadly, I mean, we're in this interconnected spaceship Earth, and this is the only one we got for right now. You know, dreamers are talking about Mars, but, you know, we can't terraform Mars unless we can terraform Earth. And we can't terraform Earth if our rivers, our mountains, our creeks, our streams are contaminated with this waste that we continue to accumulate. We continue to produce more of, this economic system we found ourselves in requires an infinite growth of profits, of returns, and infinite resources. But we don't have infinite resources. The resources we have are precious, and they're also shared. Not any one of us have any claim to our water, to our air, to our soil, but we have this illusion that we do. We have this illusion to that
That's
we can just
CEO
that we can
take
a claim.
Said.
No. And
did you see the CEO of Nestle Corporation said, "No, water is not a human
right. It's not a human right." No.
So yes, it is a human right. But this is the point here, Drew. Okay, all of that is correct, but how do we get? See, this is what we're facing. Like, we are so overly polluted, and people are so overwhelmed. They feel like they're so overwhelmed, and it reminds me of those women who have been abducted, who never run away when they go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
Who don't scream out and yell. You know what I mean? Like.
And then after time, it turns into Stockholm syndrome, and we begin. You know, we create a prison, and we're the guards and the prisoners. You know, it's sick. It's psychological warfare.
Well, that is exact, and it's all planned. And so now that we're aware of this, this is why, frankly, like, I have not given up on St. Louis, even though very few people have really. They talk to me, and then they kind of get cold feet when they start realizing it might reflect on my husband's job. She might say something about somebody. You know what I mean? Like, because really, it's the polluters. This is the hardest part about St. Louis that is a difficult story to comprehend, and it makes me understand two things. A, what's happened in St. Louis is happening in many communities across the United States. Only the difference is yours is on fire and it is escaping through the air. And it's a magnitude. Like, yours, guys, is on Balco. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's other communities that have uranium tailings and other communities that have nuclear pollution, and the kids are just as sick. Everybody's dying. But you guys have air that smells like horrible eggs, worse than that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
From what I've been told, and it's nonstop, and it's not just from nuclear. It's from all the chemicals, and it's just I'm still nonplussed at the lack of regard for human life that your own elected officials can just brush this off and not bring in the military and say, you know what, we're going to fix this one way or the other. You know, the United States military actually does manage its nuclear waste pretty decently when it does.
Yeah, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers formerly utilized site remedial action program. They're technically, they're contractors of the government, and they're not technically military, quote unquote, but yeah, they have a great track record of.
This is why I am just nonplussed that it's been allowed to die in legislation. That the other, like my own congressman, like I can't believe him. Like, he's not jumping up and down. These people need to, like, hold a sit-in for the people of St. Louis. I mean, honestly, that whole stupid little gun control thing. We're going to sit down like three-year-olds and park ourselves until you do something about gun control. Really? Shut up. Like, for real? Like, honestly.
It had so many opportunities to do something prior to that. I don't know. That seemed like a stunt.
It is a stunt, and because actually all of these things, I actually believe a lot of these are stunts. That's a perfect word. I think they are stunts.
Political theater.
You know, yes, we're not talking about Hillary Clinton being a criminal and the Clinton Foundation not filing a single paper, a shred of paper. All the money they took in from Haiti, not one piece of paper has been filed. Not one piece of paper. That to me, after that young kid in the DNC being murdered, is like, who the heck? I actually, you know, Drew, I called up Senator Sheehan's office and I said that to her in their office. I was dumbfounded that they're supporting her. So even Claire McCaskill's office, I said this to, like, I'm just dumbfounded that these women are bobbleheading after her. Because
dumbfounded is a good word. There's one thing particularly worth noting, I'm surprised this hasn't yet tanked her campaign. But the whole 28 pages of the 9/11 Commission report detailing the Saudi connection to the 9/11 plots, and Saudi Arabia is one of her largest campaign contributors.
Your phone's clicking out there, brother.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. How
can you
dare
hear me now?
We talk about Santa
Cruz? Yeah. Oh, I see. I get it.
That's how it works. Start talking. I actually have started, after she killed that kid last Sunday, I call her Hillary Monsanto Stalin Clinton, because she gets the name of Stalin on her. She's just got way too many dead people in her trail. I mean, she will stop at nothing. Honestly. I mean, I kind of beginning to worry for Bill Clinton. She's kind of a black widow spider, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She might have had enough of him already. I mean, for real, no offense, but oof. I'm not a big Bill Clinton fan, but I don't want anybody to, like, be 86 in their sleep or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to go too far into that, but I'm curious, you know, I'm curious to what degree their relationship is held up, or if they're not just a power couple. Like, I assume you've seen House of Cards on Netflix, the Netflix series.
Uh-uh,
I mean,
never.
basically a documentary of our political theater. But, you know, they just seem like a power couple at this point, that just they're financially tied. And
well, I think it's been said that they're like, they're not really part of that upper 1% of 1%. They're just the well-paid servants of the upper 1%. You know what I mean? Like, they're on the bottom, the very top fringe of the 99%, and they're just very expensive.
They're
and
holding
they're,
on
they're
there.
They're very obedient servants. They will do whatever it takes. And they have built, like, they, can you imagine the chutzpah it takes to take in all that money to get on, sit with Bush and go to Haiti and say, let's donate, and they, billions of dollars, and not nobody, there's not one tax return done, not one declaration of any project, nothing.
No accountability, no transparency.
But it's like the chutzpah it takes to, like, who, I'm running for president, like, what do you think? I don't manage that. Who cares? What are you talking about? You're being a conspiracy theorist expecting me to know about that. Really? That's the person we're having run our country? I don't think so. So anyways, we could get off on that one, because I know the Democratic Party's the convention is this week. I'm still encouraging people to contact their superdelegates and tell their superdelegates to give their Democratic vote to Bernie inside the convention, because if he came out, we might not have the Trump-Pence presidency that is pending if they give it to her. That's what I think.
Yep.
Drew Kuhn from the Missouri Accountability Project, thank you for joining us. We have about 3 minutes left. Tell our listeners how they can find you again. And one, do they, is there a phone number or an email address?
Yeah, there. I have an email address. You can go to MissouriAccountabilityProject.org/contact. There's a form there where you can reach out, and that'll go to my email through a proxy, and we'll get in touch. I appreciate your listeners for spending your Monday with us, and I encourage you to ask questions, to think for yourself, to vote, and
even
to...
Even if you think voting doesn't matter, you think it's...
Even if you think it doesn't, do it anyway, if you can.
If you can, as what? How many? How many votes in California?
If you can,
1.5 million. 15%.
15% were flipped.
15%.
Yeah. 2%, and we investigate for election fraud in other countries.
Wow! No,
because we can't have any dictators over there.
No wonder that kid got murdered last week. That's pretty serious. Wow. Well, the Missouri Accountability Project, making them accountable. Thank you for that 15% statistic. This is the kind of brilliant information we find from Drew Kuhn. Thank you, Drew. You're such a delight to talk to. And you are a perfect role model. You're 23, 24 years old. And you know what? Instead of whining and complaining about how screwed up the situation is, because he's living just miles away from these burning dump sites, he's getting an education. He's actively engaged. He works for the water supply company. He's doing his research. He's staying engaged. Honestly, my hat's off to you, Drew. Thank you so much for showing us how to put our courage feet on.
Cheers. Thank you, Lonnie.
Well, thank you. And to all of our listeners, do put your courage feet on. Find a way to get actively engaged. And please do pay attention. And even if you think it's not going to matter, get politically active. Push back. Don't let these guys just run all over us. Please make your comments known at the EPA website. We'll have links below. And thank you for joining us. Put your courage feet on. And
don't mourn, organize.
Yeah, don't mourn, organize. What a great phrase. Don't mourn, organize. Yeah, exactly.